Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hey, this week I am tickled to present a new sponsor for this week's episode, Popporn. Now, before you type that into your Google search, know that this is extremely not safe for work. So be careful, because there will be naked people immediately, like immediately, when you type this in. So Popporn is actually a really funny site. I could read the script that they gave me, but honestly, I have been offered different advertisers for this show, and I have turned down some because I didn't think it was ethical, or I didn't think it was high quality, or it just didn't sit right with the message of the show. And so when I was presented with a porn site, I was like, okay, well, let's take a look. And I was actually quite pleased with Popporn. They do have an adult video section. They have a sex toy section, but they also have a humor section, which I was curious about, is rather funny and not disrespectful. Like, they don't feel the need to be disrespectful to anyone in order to be funny, which I think is powerful and brave and important as a voice in the sex industry field. So I'm glad to partner with Popporn. So they are sponsors, and let's see what are they throwing down here. Let's see. You love getting free stuff, right? Well, Popporn.com, the internet's most reliable and discreet adult entertainment shopping destination, wants to give you 5 free full-length adult DVDs with any order of $15 or more. Just visit popporn.com/sexnerd, that's important now, to take advantage of this amazing introductory offer for Sex Nerd Sandra listeners. Go ahead, you deserve it. Just visit popporn.com/sexnerd. And when you spend $15, you'll get 5 additional DVDs absolutely free with your order. Now, I was poking around because obviously I want to know, like, oh, well, what do they cover? And they have, you know, a wide variety of things. One thing that I was glad to see that they carry is the Screaming O Lipstick vibe. It's a really discreet vibe, and it's very powerful. I've felt it myself, and it's got a soft silicone tip. It's $23. I also laughed hard because they have the Muse vibrator, which looks like a very angry rabbit. M-U-S-E. If you want to check that out, go there. Type in Muse and you will see it. It is all right. Oh, it's so cute and silly. So yes, go to popporn.com/sexnerd, because that way when you click in to shop around, if you buy stuff, only $15 gets you 5 extra DVDs. It's really fun. So thanks to Popporn, and let's do this thing. Hey, sex nerd. Welcome to the show. So this episode, you get to hear me fangirling so hard. And I tried to hold it in, so maybe it wasn't so obvious, but I definitely stutter and hesitate in ways I don't usually do. There was a lot of, there were so many feelings happening in my heart place. Ian Kerner, I am a big admirer of his work, not just with the book, the phenomenal book, She Comes First, but also, since then, goodinbed.com, I think, is a phenomenal resource for people, not only for articles, but also publications that you can download. They're affordable and just written by fantastic people. We'll get into that. I don't want any of this to be redundant. I will say, when I was listening to this, I couldn't not be reminded of the evening when I came to his practice when I was in New York, and it had been a beautiful trip, and that night it started to rain, and I remember being lost at Columbus Circle trying to find his building, just no umbrella, very cold, and walking into this therapy office, and the receptionist like making me wait, and just being worried that I looked like this just drenched sewer rat is coming in and being like, I really like your work. Anyway, so he was marvelous to make the time to chat with me. He has a very full schedule. I'm sorry for the parts where I'm flustered all to hell. There's one part where I say Google cunnilingus class to see what videos pop up. You'll know when you hear it. After listening to this, I did look up cunnilingus class, and I was very unhappy to see what popped up. Not that great. The information out there leaves a girl wanting, for sure. Also, a wonderful gem at the very end of this episode is that we get into porn usage and a surprising look at the pros and cons of using porn in your own life and in relationships. So I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're listening. For those of you who listened to the Sex and Death episode, just that marvelous interview with Caitlin Doughty last week, my apartment is in full. All the erotic art I mentioned last week is off the walls. I actually listened to this episode because I take notes and things for the description, and I started moving furniture while I was listening to this episode. And like, I took a door off a wall. I was living the Pinterest dream. All right, thanks for tuning in. I'm so glad that you're here this week. Know that the holidays are approaching and Sex Nerd Sandra merch, totes available, literally, there are totes and stickers and t-shirts at sexnerdsandra.merchtable.com. Those are there for you. Let's see what else. I am continuing to enjoy my November. It's only the 5th. I voted yesterday. I'm getting some projects started and I'm just so glad to have this time with you every week. So, strap in and enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Sex Nerd Sandra podcast.
Whoa, what are these kids doing in here? Hey, if you're under 18, go ask your mom. Now that we're alone, let's start the show.
Hi, Ian Carter of the best oral sex book for pleasuring women ever in the universe. She Comes First. Welcome to my microphones.
Thank you. It's a lovely microphone. It's nice to be here.
Thank you. Wow. Okay. Can I fan out a little bit?
Sure.
Is that allowed?
I'm very modest. So yeah, I'd appreciate it. Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I feel safe. This is a safe space. We're in a psychotherapy room. We're, you know, feelings, or it's a safe space for feelings, I imagine.
Yeah.
So, your book, She Comes First, which came out, several years ago now, it's still a mainstay in the sex ed technique kingdom. And that's a powerful thing considering the market seems just filled to the brim with sex ed manuals.
Yeah, I'm amazed. Yeah. I mean, I'm happy. I'm amazed. The book came out 10 years ago. It was my first book. It was really written from my heart, sort of personally and professionally. And a kind of a magic happened with it that I have never been able to reproduce again with any other book. I've sort of stopped trying. So it's now it's the book that lives on. I'm always happy whenever I go to Amazon, people are still largely saying positive things, and it's and it's still selling. And Milan Kundera, who's one of my favorite authors, he wrote The Unbearable Lightness of Being.
Oh,
he
okay.
was a Czechoslovakian author who moved to France and wrote some pretty amazing books, many of which had erotic themes. But he said that if he could have called every single one of his books The Unbearable Lightness of Being, he would have loved to, because to him it's the perfect title. And I sort of feel the same way for me about She Comes First. If I could just keep writing books and calling every single one of them She Comes First, I'd be a happy author.
Now, do you feel like the title is what made it so popular and still? I mean, what do you think it is about your book? Oh, my goodness. It's kind of fun thinking
out
because
I don't know. I mean,
I recommend it all the time.
I appreciate that. It's funny. I mean, some people, you know, it has what is the cover again? It's like the papaya with the banana in the background, right?
Yes.
And, you know, so the papaya, which is very sexual and obviously indicative of female sexuality, is up front. And the banana is sort of in the background. And it's interesting. My publisher at the time, Judith Regan, who is a kind of an amazing publisher who was really tapping into the zeitgeist at that time. I was supposed to have meaningful input into the cover. And I said, yeah, it's fine. Do anything you want as long as it doesn't involve fruit or flowers. And so go figure, I got back this cover that was fruit. And at first I was really upset about it. And then I started showing it around to people and they really liked the cover. So I'd like to think the cover has something to do with it. I'd like to think that the title has a lot to do with it. The message of female sexual empowerment. I mean, the book was written for men. The subtitle is The Thinking Man's Guide to Pleasuring a Woman. But the book is enormously popular with women, buying it for men, buying it for their male partners, their mm-hmm. female partners, their friends. So, you know, I'm just, you know, overjoyed that it seems to appeal to everybody. I recently received a lot of emails from moms who have bought it for their sons.
Whoa.
They're like teenage sons, which I think is really awesome that yeah. a mom could buy her son the book, She Comes First.
Powerful.
So I don't know quite what went into the success of it, but I'm really happy about it.
I have opinions as to why it's so popular.
Okay.
But I also have a it's opinions and questions.
Well, you can share both.
Because
why?
I have a large library mm-hmm. of sex technique books and feelings manuals, and it's all there. And I'm not I love to read, and I love, but I'm more of a, like, I'll open up a book to a chapter and be like, tell me all this about this. And then yeah. I'll go and find the same topic in another book. And that's kind of how I traverse those sorts of books. And your book, it's got 75,000 chapters in it. Like, it's all these tiny chapters, yeah, and you don't see that. Why did that happen?
Why does it have so many small chapters?
Right, like, because it's...
You're saying it doesn't have long chapters.
I'm saying it, well...
It has a lot of very short, concise chapters.
Exactly, and a lot of them. And that's not what I see with most yeah. sex manuals. How did that come to be?
Well, it was originally sort of... I did loosely base it on the structure of Elements of Style by Strunk and White, and that is a book that... that is a book that has a lot of short chapters. Other than that, I don't know, because I don't really write in concise, pithy manners. Hence, I don't tweet or Twitter, mm-hmm. and I don't do a lot of social media, because in general, it's very hard for me to be concise, and I don't think or speak in sound bites. So, again, that book really came out of a deep place and just sort of came, you know?
Okay. Yeah, it came.
Came.
It totally came. My opinion... I mean, I like the concision, that's not a word, of your book's chapters, but there's something, I feel like there's something philosophically different about how you approach the topic versus how most people talk about pleasure. Mm-hmm. And I liked that a lot. But I've never been able to analyze it.
I also approached it from an honesty. I sort of said, like, look, I suffered from premature ejaculation. Mm-hmm. I felt like a sexual cripple. I had a lot of problems mm-hmm. satisfying a woman, developing sexual self-esteem, mm-hmm. and that I was kind of like many young men, sort of a prisoner of what I call the intercourse discourse, really thinking that mm-hmm. penis-vagina intercourse is what it's all about. And I really discovered oral sex and cunnilingus as kind of like an alternative path to pleasure, and mm-hmm. in doing so became sort of a sexually alive, sexually exuberant person. And so maybe part of the book's appeal is that you're ultimately connecting with an author who was very tormented and tortured and around sexuality, and ultimately became very exuberant about sexuality. And mm-hmm. hopefully some of that exuberance and joy is what comes through. But I begin the book with the chapter Confessions of a Premature Ejaculator, and I talk about feeling like a sexual cripple. So maybe most authors don't really come to it from quite as honest a place. I don't know.
But it's also, okay, because I haven't spent like long times.
You didn't even read the first page.
Oh, no, I remember that part.
Okay.
I'll reference it, and, mm-hmm. and I read it a long time ago. I think I wrote a paper on it or something. I don't know. It was a long time ago. But as a female-bodied person, reading what someone's written about my body and pleasure and feeling like you get it, mm-hmm. most of the time... I feel like they sort of get it, but they're speaking so broadly that, it applies to other women, but mm-hmm. not me. But it was interesting that it felt like when you wrote, you left space for all sorts of types of female-bodied people and how they're wired. But I don't know. It's just like you got it. I don't know if it's just you're really smart or, mm-hmm. Are you generally kind of nerdy and deconstruct things and try and go to underlying...
I was a literature major in college. Mm-hmm. I was brought up under the auspices of kind of Marxist literary criticism, which is fundamentally, you deconstruct everything around you. You deconstruct the capitalist culture that you live in. Not to say that I'm, you know, a Marxist or a communist, but I did.
You're a socialist.
You know, I grew up, you know, sort of being educated about how to deconstruct everything around you. So, I mean, that is sort of my default point of view. I mean, I think, you know, I think part of the power of the book is recognizing a kind of realistic view of female sexuality and making that view accessible and attainable to everyone. Again, I'm kind of dumbfounded that the book continues to sell. I mean, first of all, in an age of porn where you could just sort of go online and probably just Google cunnilingus lesson. I mean, where
have
everything.
Have you done that lately?
You know, not lately.
You should see what's out there.
Is there, what is out there? I mean, tell me what's out there. Look where you are right now. This is my life. This, this room, this box. I don't get out there that much. What's out there?
Thriving practice. What's out there? Honestly, I haven't Googled that either. I mean, I should because, I mean, okay, Nina Hartley, do you know?
Yeah, sure.
Nina Hartley. She has a phenomenal clip that's somewhere on the internets about teaching the camera and pointing at herself and kind of showing some things. And that was actually quite good, and she had some techniques.
Also, I'm a pretty modest person. I'm kind of a modest person. I'm a private person. I'm not an exhibitionist. You know, on the sexual spectrum, from total comfort creature to total thrill seeker, I probably am more of a comfort creature. I've been married a long time to one person. We have a few things at work, and you know, everything old is new again, and it's always new again, but I don't need to, like, go out in search of a lot of, you know, sexual novelty and sexual stimulus. So maybe, again, just sort of my sort of kind of private, modest approach, which I think is sort of in the book, maybe there's a certain safety in that and a security and an appeal in that.
You're not trying to show off. It's just you're trying to help. It just felt, that's what it felt like.
Well, I was trying to write nice sentences, and I was trying to be clever and witty and fun. And I have been accused in that book of showing off a little bit. And maybe there was a little piece of me that wanted to have, you know, some fun.
I hate a lot of blowjob classes. Like, at some point, you got to be like, look, I figured out some stuff.
Right.
Sometimes people say I'm...
Right.
I'm,
you know, maybe what people respond to, too, is it's not that usual, like, self-help voice of the therapist.
It's not. It's true. But you, this literally, what you're hearing, podcast listener, is the voice of a therapist.
Yes, I am. I'm a sex therapist and a marriage and family therapist, couples therapist.
What's your, because you become a therapist and then you go for extra training on sexuality.
Yeah.
Is it asect?
There's a lot of different paths. I mean, sex therapy is not a licensable profession. So there's a lot of different paths. I mean, you know, I think sort of what you're doing probably on the education front and giving classes, and that's probably the most relevant and the most useful to people. You know, with me and my patients, I work with a lot of couples, and I work with some, even some triples, polyamory, non-monogamy.
If you're in New York City, which is where we are, and you're looking for a sex therapist, open-minded guy over here.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I work a lot with the LGBTQ community. I have a lot of trans patients and a lot of, gay and lesbian patients. And,
I bet you have a waiting list, don't you?
I'm sort of maxed out.
Yeah.
I'm sort of just at my, at my max, but it's comfortable. I let, you know, I also don't believe in keeping people in therapy forever. So, you know, old patients leave and new patients come in, but I like it. I like, you know, I like really just every week for an hour getting to deepen somebody's story. And I like just creating a kind of a relaxed, calm, reflective place. You know,
that's a great way to describe it.
Yeah. Mellow, I guess. Are we putting people to sleep, you think?
No, not at all. No.
I think a lot, so my eyes go all over the place. And mm-hmm. But I'm present to what you're saying, but it's do I ask about this or do I ask about that? Because 5 minutes ago he said that thing, and I still want to know about that thing. But then, like, what are you saying?
Well, slow down. Relax.
Want to breathe?
No, just slow down.
Get present to my body.
Whatever questions come to mind, those are going to be the most important ones. Whatever's on your mind.
What's in my mind?
We're co-constructing this experience together. You're not just interviewing me, right?
We're paddling this canoe together.
Yeah.
Oh, I've never said that before. I like that metaphor.
Is your podcast normally like, what's the tone of the podcast? I haven't heard it. I will after this, but does it tend to be kind of like it's outrageous and bawdy?
No. I mean, you're getting it right now. I mean, I'm just curious and I ask things and I you've probably noticed I'll interrupt you with like, aha, mm-hmm. and like, what? Mm-hmm. And then I get excited about knowledge and I am gearing up for a lot of questions right now because I'm so excited. Half of them I will not actually get to
ask. Do you think, you know, I wrote the book 10 years ago. Do you think things have changed a lot in 10 years?
I don't think vulvas have changed.
No.
I think women are still, you know, we haven't evolved biologically. We still have all our pinkies and everything.
But it's interesting. I remember, you know, when I was writing She Comes First and I was promoting it, it was possible to know sort of every magazine in the country that I should try and be talking to or every blog mm-hmm. that I should try and be connecting with. And the whole world of media has just so exploded. And mm-hmm. there are now thousands of sex bloggers and hundreds of thousands of sex tweeters and so much porn. There's more porn than mm-hmm. air, practically, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm. And it's important. It's exciting. I think of it as the Wild West or when the railroad first started being built around America mm-hmm. and like every couple of miles you had a different railroad company. Mm-hmm. And things weren't streamlined until much later. Yeah. And it's a lot of noise. I think being on YouTube, being on Twitter, and just at least being present. Like, I like that your Twitter account. It's like, just tweet it at good in bed. Like, you know, I'm like, that's clean. I like that. And then I go over there. I follow you and stuff. Okay. I would like it though, as a sex therapist, is when you say, you know how when you say something like, kind of wise and deep and you go, whoa, about like, whoa, I just said something that's like good knowledge. Did you ever have that moment where you find a little nugget of way of distilling down a lot of information?
Well, you know, I definitely feel like over the years of doing this, I've, you know, developed, you know, a few insights that I find persistently relevant.
What are your sex therapy insights?
Well, like, ask me a question. What do you want an insight about?
Okay, this is not a fun game.
Well,
this
you can't just say insights. Well, I mean, let's be specific. Do you want some insights around female pleasure?
You brought it up. So I thought maybe you had a list of them, like the five things.
No, I don't have like a list.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, sure. Female, because you just asked me if things have changed. And I think promotionally, like business-wise and media-wise, sure. But the basics of what makes a relationship and what makes sex work, I think we're just, I don't know. We need more tools, but I think we're still the same people that we were 10 years ago. Maybe a little bit savvier. Maybe not. I don't know. I don't know who you are listening. But yeah, what is a consistent insight about female pleasure?
So not too long ago, there was a study, I believe, in the Netherlands on female and male sexuality, and men and women were placed into fMRI, sort of brain scanning machines. And the idea was sort of like, well, what happens in the female brain during sexual arousal that's different than the male brain? And to me, this study yielded a kind of important insight. And for women, the more aroused that women became and the closer they got to orgasm, the more parts of the female brain, especially the parts that were associated with stress, anxiety, high emotion, those parts of the brain sort of deactivated, right? Because the fMRI machine is sort of showing which parts of the brain are lit up. And so in the male brain, all throughout the process of arousal to orgasm, kind of the brain stayed completely lit up. And orgasm was sort of like the fireworks festival. But in the female brain, parts of the female brain didn't remain lit. In fact, they went dim and they went dark. And again, so the conclusion, and those were the parts of the brain that were associated with stress, anxiety, really high emotion. And so the conclusion of the study was that for women, the process of relaxation, the process mm-hmm. of mental deactivation, the process of feeling safe and secure. You're looking at my fingers. I guess I moved my fingers.
I'm a hand watcher. Okay. People point that out to me all the time.
Yeah, you're watching. It's okay. Now I know.
Yeah.
Now I know.
I'm like a T-Rex.
You're watching my hands. So to me, it's really important for men to know that, you know, you can be focused on technique or you could be focused on novelty. But I think the main thing that you should be focused on if you want your female partner to be pleasured and satisfied with you is to focus on the relaxation, the deactivation, the mental disconnection.
I thought when you were saying at first that as they get aroused, it makes the stress go away. But you're saying it's the opposite thing where you need to relax in order for the arousal to heighten.
Yeah, you need to be able to deactivate your brain. You need to be able to disconnect and relax. Men do not need to be able to do that in order to feel aroused and have an orgasm. And I think that's part of the reason, you know, you tend to find that women fantasize a lot during sex, mm-hmm. often about somebody or something that mm-hmm. has nothing to do with the person they're actually having sex with. And men do not really fantasize a lot during sex unless mm-hmm. they're, you know, really bored and looking to kind of mentally augment the experience. But mm-hmm. if you have a man who's excited to be there and a woman who's excited to be there, it's much more likely that the woman is going to be the one fantasizing during sex. And I think that has a lot to do with, again, fantasy being a way of getting away from reality, getting away from the stresses and anxieties of everything that's happening outside that bedroom door if you happen to be having sex in a bedroom. So I think fantasy actually plays a big role in the process of mental deactivation that we were just discussing, which I said is very important to the process of arousal mm-hmm. and ultimately having an orgasm.
I really want to ask you two different questions.
Ask them both and I can pick which one I want to answer first.
The second one is like a whole thing where I totally want to go. The first one is just a little check-in about this research mm-hmm. around gender queer or you know, the people who don't fall into the binary of mm-hmm. you know, man and woman. Was there any research about how their brains reacted or any interesting
on this,
stuff?
No. I mean, there's so little. I mean, in the last few years, there's, you know, been more research in the LGBTQ community, but it's rare to find, you know, really full-fledged, interesting studies of LGBTQ sexuality. Mm-hmm. You know, I know with a lot of the trans patients that I work with mm-hmm. who, you know, are really coming from the perspective of not just sexual arousal, but really sexual arousal in the context of gender identity or gender fluidity, mm-hmm. that frame of identity is really paramount and more important as sort of the background to sexual arousal.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Also, I think that'd be a really fun project for someone to do in the research to take all of these studies that are so essential to us understanding desire and arousal in men and women. Like they're like, oh, did you know that when you strap a woman up and what makes her make her watch like animal porn and mm-hmm. suddenly she's aroused and like we're learning so much. It's like, let's take all the people who aren't in traditional gender categories and do all of the same studies with them and see what we find out. But I want to ask you this and I'm very excited about it. Can you tell? Pretty excited.
I can. You seem excited.
Okay. You're so mellow. I love it. Actually, mellow and a therapist is actually very exciting. Fantasy, mm-hmm. sexuality. These are topics very interesting to me. But there's an aspect of sexuality I don't understand very well. And I wonder if you have any thoughts about it. Where I'll talk to people about their knowledge around BDSM. Mm-hmm. negotiation, their fantasies, what they want to play out, power dynamics, things like that. Then there's flirting and pickup artists and how mm-hmm. to get someone interested in you and take them home mm-hmm. or find your wife or whatever you want to do with pickup artist skills. There's people who do NLP, neuro-linguistic mm-hmm. programming. I just did a couple episodes on erotic hypnosis.
What was erotic hypnosis? You mean to deal with like sexual dysfunction?
No, like ED, this is not clinical hypnosis. Okay. The person is a licensed practicing hypnotist, but then also with his wife, they practice erotic hypnosis, which is kind of just training. I don't understand okay. enough to really
all
go
right.
there.
I'm curious. Okay. Yeah, but so you're sort of talking about all this stuff.
So there's all of these different aspects of sexuality, mm-hmm. and it's just the tip of the iceberg anyway. But there's this aspect, and I don't even know, I have the language for it, but it's being a woman mm-hmm. and exploring Emily Nagoski.
Nagoski, I love Emily. Oh, she's the fantastic. Best.
Oh, yeah.
You but, should really be interviewing her as much as you can.
She was on the show a few weeks ago. Okay. Yeah. Well, she's far away. But she talked all about sex drive and it was fascinating. I can't wait for her book to come out next year. But like how to, as a woman who my arousal profiling is I need to feel really safe to mm-hmm. feel turned on. And I can be turned off easily and my sex drive comes and it goes and it's all over the place. And fantasy is important, and I don't have a word for this, but where I'll be, this, my whole sex life really, it's I'll be with my partner. I won't be thinking of anyone mm-hmm. else, but I'll be thinking, I'll be kind of layering a transparency over and drawing on some sort of power dynamic mm-hmm. or some kind of situation or, mm-hmm. oh, we have to be very quiet. I make up anything mm-hmm. to make it more interesting. And I don't have words for that, but I think it's like transparency fantasy. I don't know if anyone else talks about that, but there's all of the stuff that turns people on in their brains mm-hmm. beyond sexting and flirting, but like even little looks and things and almost like romance. Why are people so into romance novels and things? And so much mm-hmm. of the sexy happens before you even get into the bedroom. And it's almost like you can't even really pinpoint why it's sexy. Like, what is that? Big question.
Well, that's a big question. I can only tell you the thoughts that are coming into my mind as you are speaking. So I don't know that I really have the answer to the question.
Okay.
But I have some associations okay. with the question. In a sexual arousal is physiological.
Mm-hmm.
You can touch your genitals long enough and hopefully something will happen.
Mm-hmm.
And for many... for many people, they really get sort of caught up in the physiological scripts mm-hmm. around sex.
Mm-hmm.
They figure out what works and they tend to replicate mm-hmm. what works. And the path to arousal is really just very physiologically based.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's mental arousal. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, it's been said that some women can have orgasms without ever touching themselves, that they can think themselves off. And, you know, certainly you can walk down the street and see somebody sexy and a woman can get aroused, a man mm-hmm. can get erect. There's such a mental component to sexual arousal.
Like when someone's funny and that's yeah. turn on. What is that? Like, why is someone being funny or just showing off that they're or really smart? And other people are like, that is so hot. Like, I'm getting kind of turned on. And they just really want to make out with the person. Like, what is that? When something that doesn't even seem that sexual is suddenly an arousal thing. It just seems, I don't know.
Well, I mean, the first thing that I'm thinking about is, you know, sort of why did Shakespeare write sonnets and why did poets write poems? And there's a theory that everything from, you know, humor to poetry to great thinking all comes back to our courtship mechanisms and the desire to, you know, sexually impact somebody. I don't happen to know if that's true or not. But
I've heard that and I don't remember where I heard that.
You know, but that is sort of one strand of thought that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
I just tend to think that, you know, I work with a lot of couples and I think for so many couples, sexually that they are really not tuned into the mental aspects of sex or the emotional aspects of sex. They're really mainly tuned into the physiological aspects of sex. And so they can't talk about fantasy or share fantasy with mm-hmm. their partner without fear of being judged or mm-hmm. fear of seeming kinky or wondering, well, is this what he or she really wants to do now? And they kind of get hijacked by the you know, the prefrontal cortex, or they mm-hmm. just get hijacked by their doubts and their anxieties. And so I think in a relationship, if you can create a space where fantasy can really flourish, mm-hmm. just as language, just as words, just as, you know, intimacy between two people, if you can develop that kind of common vocabulary through fantasy where you're really opening up the mental side of sex, I think that very powerful.
How do you do that? Create a safe environment, a healthy space for fantasy in your relationship.
Well, how do you do it?
I don't know. I mean, like, I've got...
Well, you're in a relationship, right? You have your partner.
It's true.
Do you fantasize with your partner?
I don't even know what that means exactly. Also, I tend to not talk so much about my personal life, so it's sort of like one of those, like,
okay.
I don't know what to share right now.
I don't want to prod you to do that, but...
Like, when you say, do you fantasize with your partner? Do you mean, like, do you go, ooh, I was thinking of doing this thing to you the other day because you look so good in that thing? Like, ooh, that would have been hot. Would it, like, where you start to narrate your own scene together?
That, or, you know, share, you know, the idea that there's a guy named a fabulous book that I would really recommend by Jack Morin, who's passed away, Morin. I forgot the exact title. Is it The Erotic Mind? Did you read it? Mm-hmm. So what I love about that book is the idea of the core erotic theme, mm-hmm. That each of us may have a core erotic theme. Mm-hmm. That core erotic theme may come down to a kind of a sexual power that allows us to maybe transform a feeling of powerlessness into power. Mm-hmm. That's one theory. But whatever it is, we each mm-hmm. have... core erotic themes. We may develop many of them over the lifetime. So not just like narrating, ooh, you were really sexy or hot and I want to, you know, rip off your clothes and do X, Y, mm-hmm. and Z, but really getting into the sharing of the core erotic theme and, mm-hmm. you know, the really like deeper turn-ons.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I should revisit that book. I don't remember
it's
if
a great
I finished
one. I wish
it
I could
not.
Interview him. But he's passed.
I know. And I got to meet him before he died. It was my first.
Who else are you? Have you interviewed Esther Perel, Mating in Captivity?
No, I think she's writing or she's okay. deep in some projects right now. I would like to. I've met her. I've seen her speak. Yeah. She's great.
She's cool.
Yeah. But yeah, I was terrified
so,
of Jack Morin.
You know, sort of talking about how to like pull this all together. You know, just thinking about some of the themes we've talked about, like you have the need for safety and security and comfort. So you need to sort of establish that. You know, another big problem is we all crave novelty mm-hmm. and excitement and stimulation, but whenever we are doing something new, we're really tasking our brain to do something new. Mm-hmm. And that tasking of the brain works against the relaxation, the deactivation that we also talked about as being important. So how do you kind of simultaneously create an environment that feels really safe and cozy and familiar and make it really exciting and thrilling and new? It's a little
That's
like
an interesting point.
Yeah, it's a little like sex really is a little like riding a bike or driving a car. If that you think about it, the first few times you're riding or driving, you really have to think mm-hmm. about what you're doing. You know, mm-hmm. am I stepping on the brake? Am I stepping on the gas? I need to steer. Have I signaled? Do I need to turn on the window wipers? You know, and then at a certain point, it becomes automatic, right? And you never think about that stuff.
But so many people go on bad driving habits. Right. Or like ones that are working against them and they keep getting into car accidents.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about driving right now.
My wife doesn't drive at all. I do all the driving. But
are you talking? I was talking about sex.
No, I'm talking about sex.
Oh, okay.
No, so no, I'm not talking about sex. Now I am talking about sex. I wasn't talking about sex. Now, but no, the question is, so like, how do you do something really new and different, and yet do it in a way that's automatic? Where you don't have to think about it. Because as soon as you're thinking about it, my position would be, as soon as you're thinking about sex, you're inhibiting arousal in some way.
You mean analyzing it.
Thinking about it, analyzing, wondering about it.
Because what if you're... Wait, okay. State your premise again. The minute you're thinking about sex, you're what?
You're inhibiting arousal.
I see. But then when I start talking about sex to people, they'll get aroused sometimes. And I'm like, okay, this is not what we were... I was just talking about like techniques and stuff. You don't need to get aroused right now. But they're thinking about sex. But thinking about sex... If you're thinking about sex, you can get aroused from what you're thinking about. Right?
Yeah, but as you're having sex, if you're really thinking about...
During the act,
so you're during the act of sex, if you're really saying, well, am I tying her up appropriately, or am I being tied appropriately, mm-hmm. or is that candle wax painful mm-hmm. or comfortable? Mm-hmm. How do you have an orgasm when you're doing all that thinking?
Mm. Great multitasking.
Right? I mean, when you're having an orgasm, don't you really just go sort of... doesn't a part of you just really go unconscious?
Definitely. Yeah. A lot of me. I mean people.
So I think honestly one of the most important ingredients to great sex mm-hmm. is that sense of safety, comfort, mm-hmm. a space that you can really deactivate in, surrender in.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's nice. It's interesting because you mentioned... That you and your wife, that you got the things that you do. Is it old becomes new again, over and over again?
Everything old becomes new again. You know, what I kind of meant there is that I've often noticed, too, with couples, is that, and this is a generalization, so okay. I'm admittedly generalizing. There are often two types of people I see. Mm-hmm. Comfort creatures, mm-hmm. people who, you know, hey, I enjoy this person. I enjoy this bed. I enjoy these positions. I actually enjoy this time to have mm-hmm. sex. And it's been working. It works yeah. year after year. Less is more. And then you sort of have people on the total other side of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. More is more. You know, they really need newness, novelty, mm-hmm. stimulation, more people, more toys, more mm-hmm. fantasy, more complications. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so for my wife and I, we both are sort of at that comfort creature end of the spectrum. I wouldn't mm-hmm. say we're total comfort creatures. Like, there is a space for some, you know, sexual adventurousness. But when I use that phrase, everything old is new again, I sort of meant that, you know, the same things tend to work over and over again. And, yes, refresh themselves over and over again. But we're both sort of... more at a similar end of the spectrum mm-hmm. than at a dissimilar end of the spectrum.
Well, thank goodness.
You know, like, and you could have two people who I work with a lot of couples who are very much aligned at the thrill-seeking end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. And that thrill-seeking and that stimulation-seeking is really at the center of the relationship.
And they're all swingers, right?
A lot of them. I mean,
I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
They're the triples that come in.
Oh, right, right,
you know,
right, right.
I said I have singles, couples, and triples.
Right.
So... you know, hopefully when it comes to sort of picking a mate and somebody that you want to stay with for a while, you're more aligned on the spectrum than misaligned.
That's definitely a spectrum I hadn't given much thought to, or I hadn't, no one ever laid out as a specific, this is a spectrum that I've noticed, but obviously working with a lot of couples, you've seen
yeah.
this.
Yeah.
Interesting.
The hard part is when somebody comes in who's essentially a comfort creature and their partner is essentially a thrill seeker. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, when they were infatuated with each other and there was sort of this neurochemical cocktail exploding in their brains, mm-hmm. that was providing sort of all of the stimulation to kind of mask inherent differences in mm-hmm. their sexual temperaments. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Okay. I mean, all those new relationship drugs in your brain...
Yeah.
They're fun. but you can ignore a lot of logistical issues that that come up later. Okay, we are just about out of time. Okay. I have one more time a question.
Yeah, please.
It's okay? Sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. No.
Okay, since you're a sex therapist, and I have not covered this in full, and so just a little tidbit, just a little taste, just to like help lead me on my journey to maybe find the topic, to explore the topic in full. You'd mentioned before we started that you do talk to guys who are concerned about their porn usage.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, of course, there's a lot of conversation in the world about addiction, and I've talked a little bit about that. It's not just because you used a lot doesn't mean it's an addiction at all. But do you feel like porn is ruining people's ability to connect with partners?
No, not at all.
No, okay.
No, not at all. It's funny. I did an episode of Dr. Oz a few years ago, and there was a huge sign behind me in neon on the monitor that said, is porn addiction ruining your relationship? And I actually was said, you know, I can't go on stage sitting in front of something that says porn addiction because I don't believe in framing, you know, the topic at all that way. And I think porn has actually saved many relationships. I know many men who have not cheated because they have access to variety and stimulation. Through porn, I've seen couples, men and women, really enjoy it individually. I've seen couples really enjoy it together. I've seen men and women use porn over and over throughout their days, weeks, months without it having a negative impact on their relationship. So, on the whole, I'm very porn positive. On the other hand, I think, you know, with the proliferation of porn, you know, I do come across a lot of men who have identified it as a problem in that they are masturbating way more than they normally would, simply because it's there. Okay. You know, it's so easy. It's so accessible. It just lights up the brain so quickly. And the ways it's affecting them, it affects them in a few ways. A, they often, especially for older guys who aren't necessarily in their teens or 20s, but are in their 30s or 40s and above and are still masturbating like they were 17, it can affect their libidos. So a lot of men are sort of squandering some of their libido that should ideally be directed towards their partners. Sometimes I've noticed in men that they are developing what would be called an idiosyncratic masturbatory style. Have you come across that term before? Idiosyncratic masturbatory style.
It sounds a little judgy. I don't think I've come across it before. It,
basically, they are using a kind of a friction, pressure, and stimulation
like
that isn't...
Humpers?
What?
Like bed humpers?
No, just with their hands, but it's not really easily replicated during penis-vagina intercourse. So as a result, you do have a lot of men, young men, who are having, in some cases, erection issues or in some cases, orgasm issues, delayed ejaculation, not being able to ejaculate. And then I have noticed with some men in porn that the problem becomes a kind of a, like a sexual attention deficit disorder. Like they're so used to a kind of a visual stimulation that it's hard to just focus on the person that's right there in front of you, especially if you don't have a vocabulary to share fantasy and you're just relying on the physical aspects of sex, you know? So here you are, you're masturbating to porn. It's almost all mental. And then you're going to have sex with your partner and it's almost entirely physical.
Ooh, what a neat way to explain that.
Oh, was it helpful? Was it interesting?
Yes.
All useful?
Are you not convinced that you are interesting in this knowledge you are throwing down?
I don't know. I'm just here in this room. You're out there in the world.
I am out there in the world.
You know, you're talking to Emily Nagoski, who I admire so much. I mean, I could listen to her all day and learn from her all day.
Yeah, she's... She's important.
This is for, like, Nerdist, so you're a sex nerd.
I am. Right? It's true.
You know.
I'm out in the world talking to other people who are interested in sex. Right. I mean, but we're also people in the world. I mean, you leave this office every once in a while.
Yeah, but I'm not, like out there in the world as, like, a sex nerd or a sex geek. I'm not, you know, going to the Museum of Sex every day and, you know, discovering
the latest the boob bouncy house.
No, I haven't been in the boob bouncy house. I was about to say the latest in teledildonics, you know.
All that stuff. I mean, it's real fun and it's some novelty, but I mean, I think you seem to have a good head on your shoulders. I believe in you.
Thank you. Well, you know, I always try and end things with my favorite phrase, Viva la Vulva.
Oh.
And it's, you know, one thought and one phrase that inspired She Comes First and kind of has gotten me this far.
Rock on. I say go team fun, but first I want to ask you, where can people find you in the world and how can they get your book?
I've written a bunch, mm-hmm. but my favorite is still She Comes First, mm-hmm. and luckily it's available on Amazon. I think there are some bookstores still left. Not many. I mean, here in New York, so many of my favorite bookstores are gone, but there's still a few really good ones, and they mm-hmm. seem to occasionally have one copy or two copies of She Comes First. Let's see. I do have this website, goodinbed.com. Mm-hmm.
Lots where of e-publications
there's
there.
There's a number of e-books by some great people. Emily Nagoski has two or three books on there.
I noticed.
And folks like Debbie Herbenick from mm-hmm. the Kinsey Institute.
Fantastic.
And Madeline Castellano, who's a great sex therapist. So there's some great e-books there. They're all very reasonably priced. Mm-hmm. And that's about it. I'm accessible. People can email me at iankerner@gmail.com. I'll do my best
to try and
respond. But I'm not I'm not really out there. You can pick up the book and you
that's
can email me and that's about it.
No, that's great. That's more than ample options of how to find out things. I just wanted to make sure that people can reach out to
you. I appreciate that.
I still very much believe
I've written a lot of books, and I still really believe in She Comes First. It really came from a passionate place, and I'm glad it still is out there.
Well, thank you for writing it and continuing on. Viva la Vulva.
Viva la Vulva.
Go team fun. That was fun. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.